Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
And now for those Americans without military experience, the closest you may have come to joining an organization with its own special code, with funny clothes that you wear, medals and symbolic patches, an organization known for working really hard but partying even harder. The closest you may have come to that is joining a college fraternity or sorority. Toga party, anyone?
The issue here is not whether we broke a few rules or took a few liberties with our female party guests. We did. But you can't hold a whole fraternity responsible for the behavior of a few sick, perverted individuals. For if you do, then shouldn't we blame the whole fraternity system? And if the whole fraternity system is guilty, then isn't this an indictment of our educational institutions in general?
Fraternity culture pilloried back in the 1978 film Animal House. And many of you have been telling us some stories of your campus days from Hendersonville, North Carolina. We did horrible things like swallowing live mice. Oh, those were the days. But the odd combination of entitlement and rebellion embodied in the college fraternity goes way back. The Phi Delta Theta fight song. That group dates from the 1840s, Miami University of Ohio. And the first fraternities go back to the founding days of America itself, a place for training people to be independent and to be leaders. Oh, and to live in much better housing than the college dorms provided. 44% of U.S. presidents have held fraternity membership. 76% of all congressmen and senators belong to a fraternity or sorority. And since 1910, 85% of the Supreme Court justices have been fraternity or sorority members. Joining us now is Mick Wilson, executive director of the National Organization of the Kappa Sigma Fraternity. Mick, welcome.
Thank you for having me on the show.
What is this history and purpose of fraternity life as you see it in the 21st century, Mick?
Well, I believe that members of college fraternities join college fraternities because they identify with a group of people who have similar values, who have similar principles, and who come together for a common purpose.
And is that why you joined?
Yes, it is. The things that I took away from the fraternity helped me prepare for life. It helped me prepare for a career. It helped me seek a master's degree. It helped me become a husband and a father and a leader in my community.
Finally, when I was going to college, fraternities were associated with kind of the conformist, dorks of the world. And that was a period we were going through in the 70s and 80s on some level. Do you think today that fraternities are on the rise and that experience that you're talking about is much more generalized to people on campuses today?
Well, I'll say this. Since 1980, when I first joined the Kappa Sigma staff, we have doubled in size. And that tells me that now that there is more interest and more need for college fraternities than at any time in our history. In Kappa Sigma, we've identified four values upon which we establish our operations and work with our undergraduates. And those four values are fellowship, leadership, scholarship, and service. And by espousing those values, practicing them on a day-to-day basis, we realize that we're preparing our young people for a future career, to be leaders in their communities, and to be good citizens.
Mick Wilson, executive director of the National Organization of the Kappa Sigma Fraternity. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Lots of stories from you, including some disturbing stories of sexual abuse and rape cases on campus associated with fraternities. Here's a comment from one of you in Portland, Oregon. Two fraternities were involved in reckless and dangerous initiations, as well as parties which ended with multiple people in the hospital with severe alcohol poisoning. The fraternities had their charters suspended. On Facebook, Patrick says, "I don't like it when the Greek system gets scapegoated just because
They are one of the only social groups on campus easy to point the finger at. Greeks do far more volunteer work and philanthropy. But is there a risk of having a child join a fraternity in college? Insurance companies seem to think so. One of the largest components of fraternity dues in 2014 goes to pay insurance premiums. And even that insurance is limited. Way beyond traditional pledge week hazing, there is a lot of risky behavior at fraternities that not even insurance companies will cover. And many students and parents discover this long after something bad has happened. Caitlin Flanagan is a contributing editor at The Atlantic who spent a year looking at this issue.
You know, the first thing people who are kind of new to this problem or who haven't learned sort of in depth about it will say is, if frat row is so bad, why don't the colleges just eliminate the fraternities? And in fact, colleges have tremendous amount of interdependence on these fraternities. 1 in 8 students in America who goes to college lives in Greek housing, so that's a huge amount of housing colleges don't have to pay for, maintain, and also fraternity men are excellent givers to their colleges and universities. And if you irritate fraternity men, if you shut down a chapter, those fraternity men will react immediately and transfer all their annual giving to the fraternity and away from the host institution. So the colleges have more to lose by unaffiliating with the fraternities than the fraternities have to lose by ending a relationship with the college.
You also describe an incentive, almost a psychological incentive. Fraternities serve a purpose of providing an argument that college is actually a blast. How does that work, do you think?
The great majority of our thousands and thousands of American undergraduates are going to huge public universities and obscure private colleges that are desperate for students. They can't stay open if they don't have them. So what ends up happening is you take a young man who's been kind of lackluster in high school and you say, okay, son, you have two choices. You can go work a really hard minimum wage job and live at home with mom hassling you all the time, or you can go to college and join a fraternity and pump the keg. Which do you think he's going to choose? And many, many times, 40% of the time, he doesn't even graduate. 60% of them end up with loans that they carry to their deathbed. You know, maybe mom and dad should have sent him to Club Med for a week, and he could have had that fun and paid it off a lot more quickly.
All this is by way of saying that parents and students go into the fraternity experience blind to the liabilities. And that really forms the core of your investigation here. Way beyond hazing, what sorts of reckless kinds of things can happen in a fraternity? And what recourse do students and parents have when these tragedies occur?
Well, you know, probably the most surprising thing to me, we have a lot of internal documents from the fraternities. One of them is a chart about injury incidents at fraternities produced by the fraternity industry, by their insurance carriers. I always would say, oh, the most dangerous thing is hazing. Hazing is the least common insurance claim against fraternities. Number one, assault and battery. They get really drunk and they fight and they get injured. Number two is sexual assault. 15% of all insurance claims against fraternities are by young women claiming sexual assault within the fraternity houses. And then number three and four, tied very closely, are these horrendous falls. They just get so liquored up and they're forever trying to climb up the fire escape or taking a serious head dive off a balcony. And kids get traumatically injured on a fairly regular basis in these drunken falls.
And then the parents become plaintiffs. And here's one, Gary Bogenberger, who's the father of a fatality at Northern Illinois University.
These young men should have been aware of the dangers of forcing even a 200-pound young man to consume 40 ounces of vodka in a two-hour period. They ignored it. And when they started passing out, they discussed calling 911 and decided not to because that would make their actions more public, and they thought they'd just put them all to bed and walk away from the thing.
And, of course, Gary's 19-year-old son, David, was eventually found dead at the Pi Kappa Alpha fraternity back in 2012. And what this parent discovered, and what a lot of parents maybe don't know, is that in many ways they've signed away the fraternity's liability for events like this by consuming even a modest amount of alcohol, and that liability suddenly shifts to the parents. How does that work in insurance terms?
Well, there's two parts to that story, and I just say very quickly, that moment when he said they thought about calling 911 and they didn't, that's just what happened if you know a kid died in the Baruch College hazing incident in Pennsylvania. Police just revealed that as the kid was dying, his fraternity brothers were Googling head injuries. They didn't want to call 911. Why? Because they know that the insurance liability that comes up around issues of hazing will leave all of them in the lurch. And so a lot of times they won't call 911. When fraternity industry says to a kid is, come on in, we have fraternity insurance. The biggest part of the dues you'll pay are for your insurance. And mom and dad are far away and they think, well, I hope nothing bad happens to my son. But I know if he ever gets caught up in one of these crazy lawsuits, we won't be liable. Not true. The fraternity will say, oh, you were part of it. You didn't haze that kid, but you were there that night. You knew it was going on. Therefore, you're cut off from your fraternity insurance, and you're no longer part of the fraternity. And where is the plaintiff going to recover those damages? From mom and dad's homeowner's insurance. And so the amount of financial liability that you add as a planning for retirement parent when your son joins a fraternity is probably the number one thing I'd like parents to take away from this essay.
Why doesn't this financial cost, why doesn't it constrain the fraternities to enforce a better code of behavior?
Well, the deepest value of fraternity life going back to the 19th century and even in a sense to the 18th century from the sort of Freemasonry that it grew out of, this notion of independence. The whole point of the fraternity life was to be independent of colleges and the kind of ministers who used to run colleges in the 19th century, and that you weren't going to be answerable to any other body except to one another and to the laws of the land. And what senior fraternity people will tell you, and a lot of them are very respectable men, they'll say there's a huge problem in American college campuses, which is you're getting all these kids whose entire high school experience has consisted of mom and dad bailing them out of any problem they ever got in. And a lot of kids show up at college thinking, rules don't apply to me. Well, it really does. They just don't have mom and dad there anymore to protect them from themselves.
Or mom and dad are understanding that it's a whole different world now, and you can't simply recover from some of these events that take place in fraternities. Caitlin Flanagan, thanks so much.
You bet. Thank you.
Caitlin Flanagan is contributing editor at The Atlantic magazine. Her piece is in the current issue, all about her year-long investigation into the culture and consequences of fraternity life in America.